All right, Lego, you're rolling with J&J to start your day. That's right. A little different. We're 2 hours early. This would normally be where Jeff Calkins is, but y'all know the deal. We're here now and grateful to be doing it. That head came off the pillow a little bit earlier this morning. And, yeah, we're ready to go. First thing of the day, I've literally got coffee instead of Coke to mark the start of things here as we become transitioned into the J&J Morning Show.
Wow.
It really does rhyme to start your day. It doesn't sound corny. Mm-mm. It sounds nice and smooth, just like I like things. J&J right. To start your day, you like that, Jeff?
I do. Now, again, our program director would say, unsportsmanlike, start your day.
But at least locally, we start your day.
That's right. So and that's what matters at the end of the day, right?
True.
The local is what matters. So, yeah, it's a new era, no question about it. You know, you get up, time to go to work. Time to get that ass to work, rise and shine.
That's right.
So we are here. We're excited about it, obviously. I can report that as of this morning, about 7:45, Jeff Calkins started sharing his location with me.
I know how important that was to you.
I don't know if you guys were listening on Friday, but that was the one thing that made me sad is that from 9 to 11, I wouldn't know where Jeff was. And his beautiful, lovely wife, Claire, suggested he begin sharing his location with me.
I like how y'all worked that out.
And he indeed did so.
So there's a peace with you
absolutely.
That might not have been there
absolutely.
Otherwise.
I feel like that was his way of like, go have the show, son.
I'm okay.
Go do it. I am at peace. So I'm now at peace, and we are excited to get to a new era of the J&J show. It was a little melancholy, I got to say, like, damn. No more 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.s. You know, we did that for a good long 10 years, basically. And
just get a lot of news in that spot. A lot of breaking news.
And our last one got, our biggest maybe ever in that time slot, which is Ja Morant on the trade block. We'll have more on that here in just a minute because there were some developments over the weekend. It's weird via the first voice, man. It's like, this is so nice.
Well, this is so nice. let's hear if Brad Carson's voice is any different in the mornings now.
No.
2 hours earlier.
It is. It's the same.
Okay.
Maybe a little more Jason Smith in the vibes.
That's right.
You know, that's what I'm trying to aspire to.
Welcome to your new
shift.
Thank you.
Welcome to your new shift.
Y'all got the breakfast going or a little bacon and eggs cooking up in the kitchen area or anything around here?
Y'all
do things a little breakfasty in the morning?
Yeah. No. Well,
that's a lie.
Look, three little pigs around the corner. We're hooked up. Yeah,
gotcha.
The new thing that I'm gonna have to get used to is like I don't have to worry about saying something different because now we're the first.
You're breaking it, dog.
I don't have to work around what Jeff said. So this is very nice. So there were some developments over the weekend with Ja Morant that we're gonna get to in terms of maybe trade destinations and likelihood of trade. Lots of pieces were written about it. So we'll get to that in just a minute. Also, Memphis basketball. Went down to Boca Raton, and it looked bad. Looked really, really bad. And we're going to address that as well. So a lot to get to on the show today. It's a packed show. Jeff Goodman, Field of 68.
Oh, man.
Is going to be the first guest of our new time slot. He's going to join us at 9:30. Now, he had a video piece yesterday. He was on with After Dark where he actually talked about candidates for the Memphis job if it opens. Now, I don't think we're that far down the road, but obviously, he does. So we're going to talk to him about that, his assessment of the Memphis situation. I'm not going to let him do his jihad NBA player campaign. He said it a billion times. We already know how he feels about former NBA players. I want to get, past that discussion and just talk about, what's happening here and what should happen. Mm-hmm. But he'll join us at 9:30. Dan Wilkins is going to join us at 10 a.m. I think he's going to start joining us weekly.
That'd be great.
I believe that is going to be the plan.
Considering how well he knows Memphis sports.
That's right. And honestly, everything,
scene.
Right?
Yes.
Everything. So now he does go to the Winter Olympics. So that may be a little bit of a snag. But I do think until he leaves, he's going to join us weekly, and then we'll pick it up when he gets back. So he will join us at 10 a.m. We'll talk to him about the College Football Championship.
Yes, man.
Set, Indiana-Miami.
Which was more impressive, Indiana. So
yeah.
That's the obvious answer.
Yeah.
I watched it twice.
He wanted to make
I wanted
sure.
to know, be able to come in here and tell you whether or not you're right on your quarterback situation. So we'll talk about that.
That's right. So get into that with Dan Wilkin at 10 a.m. And maybe get his thoughts on Memphis Tiger basketball as well, because obviously he used to cover the team.
It feels like we all did at one point or another.
We all did. We all do. We all have. Absolutely. And then at 11:25, this is interesting. This is weird. like saying all the new times now. I'm going to get used to this.
That would be our first guest.
I'm going to get used to this. Why wouldn't we have Jason Fitz? Why would we not have Jason Fitz on the first show?
Oh, Fitzy.
So he's going to join us at 11:20. He has been so very kind to me. He says he is so proud of us for getting the morning show. He thinks we're going to be absolutely awesome. So he's going to join us at 11:25. And
very kind of him.
We'll talk about the Raiders' number one pick. We'll talk about the NFL playoffs. Those happened. I'm sitting across from a man who...
Did the playoffs happen?
Oh, my goodness.
Something went down in the playoffs? Stafford beat us.
Jason.
Bryce. What happened?
Holy crap.
Divine intervention.
Woo! Bear the hell down, Jason. Congratulations.
Well, yep. Times have changed, haven't they?
Times have changed.
Not just the slot, but my fortunes when it comes to NFL football, haven't they?
Is
Green Bay dead?
Did
we just pack Green Bay up?
Yeah.
Okay. They used to own us. Now they don't.
Yep.
So, yes, times have changed, and I can't wait to talk a little Bears football because they are one of the last four teams in the NFC. How about that?
They are one of the last four teams remaining.
The other three, all West teams.
How about that?
NFC West.
The NFC. Did not have that one. Did not have that one before the season started.
No one did.
I will tell you that. So,
what a win.
That's the show today. We're going to continue doing the rundown, although because we're starting so early, we're going to start doing that at 11. So we're gonna reset the show at 11 as opposed to we would do it second hour in the old format. We're going to do it in the third hour now because it's a morning show, and we're going to let news matriculate.
Yes.
Ideally, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the right way to go. I mean, again, all of you guys don't care about that. You're just listening, but I'm just saying, you know, for housekeeping purposes.
Yes.
So anyway, that is the show. Welcome to the J&J show.
Hello.
In 92.9 FM ESPN Lore. New day indeed. Let's start though with some news over the weekend. We got out of here on Friday afternoon, and the news was that the Grizzlies are entertaining trades officially for Ja Morant. Now, he was at the game on Friday night. I was there.
At the game as well on Sunday.
He was at the game on Sunday.
But, yeah, you were there Friday.
I was there on Friday. I watched that debacle, sadly.
Lost that. Won yesterday, yes.
13-0 run to end the game against the Nets. So, you know, at this point, you're kind of in no man's land with, like, are you going to trade away Ja? Do you want to win? Do you want to maximize this pick? Because, again, I'll say Darius Acuff. See what Kingston Flemings did against Baylor over the weekend? Exciting. This is a LeBaron Filon, obviously. Like, this is a really good year if you have a top 6-7 pick to need a guard because there's some potential franchise changers out there, to draft and bring in. But now the real question, Jason, moves to whether or not the Grizzlies will find a deal for Ja Morant. And there are conflicting reports out there about whether that will, you know, materialize. I think the last I saw was the Kings. They were one of the rumored spots that would trade for him.
Right.
They said they would only do it if the Grizzlies were prepared to accept a package of, like, DeMar DeRozan, Devin Carter, and picks. And I don't think
they didn't specify which picks or
right,
what picks. Or
right. I don't think that's picks. Where the – and there's no way that the Kings would want to send one of their good ones, right? If they have good ones, I don't get that sense. The question just becomes, will the deal materialize or will the Grizzlies have to take a lesser one?
Well, let me ask you, let's knock this out first. Because the Grizzlies, and Isolo said that they're not playing Ja Morant strictly based on the injury.
Right.
We don't believe that, do we?
No.
Okay. So, question being, because there is some school of thought, you should play Ja to help you trade him. See what I'm saying? Put him out there, showcase him a little bit, get him out there, and so teams can see. I'll tell you what I think about that. Tell me, would that be the right move right now? Do you feel a certain kind of way that he should be out there, even in helping your attempts to move him?
No.
I don't either.
He is too injury prone.
Exactly.
He's
how could we not be factoring that in? What if he goes out and hurts himself?
Yeah.
You and I just talked about it all last week. We saw kind of one of those games, a 40-point game against Philadelphia.
Correct.
A couple weeks back. Leave that out there.
Mm.
You know, let the teams that
nobody
you're,
needs
you're
tape
dealing
on
with
Ja Morant
that,
in 2026.
Exactly, bro. And if they need recent tape about, you know, whether
show
or not he's lost
Philly
a
game.
Step,
yeah, exactly.
Show them that 40-plus point
show
game.
Show them the
Suns game
winner.
He went 16 of 22 in that game.
Yep.
Show them that one.
Yeah.
Don't put him back out there.
Yes.
Lord knows the man could get hurt again.
Yeah, because
and then where are you?
I would say it's different than the Trae Young situation in that if a team trades for Ja Morant, it's not going to be a loser. It's going to be a team that wants to win
now. Trying to convince itself it's worth doing now because he's going to raise him up.
And so they need him to play. Unlike the Wizards, who are fine with Trae Young not playing.
Right.
Because they're going to just maximize their draft pick.
Right.
The team that trades for Ja Morant is going to say, we need a difference maker at the deadline to get us over whatever hump we're dealing with.
Unless
right
it's Sacramento and they're just trying to get over the hump to get back into the back of the playoffs.
Right.
I'm thinking more for using Minnesota as the example.
Miami.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Miami, yes.
Teams like that. I know Houston says they don't need a point guard. They just lost their third straight with no point guard, and that was to the Kings.
Yeah.
Now, they're shooting poorly from three, so that probably
doesn't help that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you are going to be, I think, negotiating with these teams at the deadline who feel a sense of desperation.
So we're on the same page. You keep them off the floor, and you keep going. No matter what happens at this point, until it's done,
absolutely,
you've got to get it. Yeah, okay,
absolutely,
get the deal done here. What you're going to get back is not a star haul.
100%.
We have to get our heads around that. Those are of us who don't have it yet. Star point guard coming back. Some large. It's not going to be at this point because he has put your back against the wall. The rest of the league knows you have to trade him.
Yep.
Okay. So. From that standpoint, now we can start talking about, okay, well, what do you get? But we're you know, what's your best case scenario in terms of return? Is it picks? Is it a young player? But that's where we are, and I'm still seeing some Grizzlies are crazy for this, and the front office is blowing it. And listen, because I've said it, I want to be clear here, to at least as we start here in a new time slot, there is absolutely a way this goes where we point the finger back at Zach Kleiman and we said, boy, you blew this. Zach Kleiman's not off the hook because they've gotten to a point now where they have to trade Ja Morant. And no one is saying that or absolving him from responsibility here. This could go really bad. You look at his history of trades,
right?
And you're at a point we agree he's never made a good trade. It hadn't been good. We'll see on the Bane deal. We'll see where that leaves us.
That's fair.
Right now, it's funny. That Phoenix thing is getting worse. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Right. In terms of that
Although they did hit on Coward.
But they hit on Coward. Right now, the Bane trade's looking.
You would say that was a net positive.
So
that was
far.
A win. And the Magic really haven't taken off.
We got more to judge there.
Yeah.
But let's be real. The history of it. Go back to Marcus Smart. You used picks to bring him in here. You had to use picks to get him out of here. And so it hasn't been all that great. So there, back to the point. There's a row where we look back on this and Ja Morant's being traded as part of it, and we say, boy, Zach Kleiman blew this, trying to get it from good to great. Had to take a step back and trade in Desmond Bane. You know, boy, you can't max out three guys in this new era. We all learned that. But where we say he failed in getting it from good to great, that could still happen. But we are at a point right now where Ja has given us no choice. We said that when we got out of here on Friday. He's backed you into this corner. He's put the Grizz at a point where, you know, the hand you've dealt them, you're not available. Are you in with the program or not? You were out on Taylor Jenkins last year. You came back with East Sloan, and you're out five games in against the Lakers. We can't trust you.
Yep.
So he's put you in a position where you've got to do this. Judgment on Kleiman, where we are, that's going to end up being reserved.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be right now. But we are at a point right now where, yes, I don't think Ja's giving you any choice.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I actually know
Ja hasn't.
I sent a thread up on Friday afternoon on Twitter where I talked about the deterioration of the situation. Look, this is – to your point, which is exactly right. Zach Kleiman is not off the hook.
Not only for
multiple bad moves that he's made in the past, not maximizing.
Let's talk. We brought this up. I don't want to get off your point. But last year and pitting Isolo and Jenkins,
that
was a wash year pitting those two together.
Incredibly awkward dynamic.
And then the way you go with no coaching search, Isolo's your guy. This could come back.
No question about it. But in terms of the Ja situation, the only person that is to be blamed for the Ja situation in Memphis is Ja. Like that's where I'm at with it, because he is the player. He is the one who was on Instagram flashing guns. He is the one who had the Pacers incident with his friend. He is the one that's shooting 20% from three. He is the one who got himself suspended. He is the one who has unfortunately not improved. He is the one that has the decline in production. The Grizzlies have stood by him publicly. They have stood by him privately. They have given him every avenue and every possible bit of leeway individually. Now, have they done enough around him? Have they maximized the roster around him? You know, I think that's almost a separate conversation.
Well, and you could, I would just say fairly, you could argue, did they hold him to account? Did they hold him accountable enough?
Yeah.
In those years.
Yeah, that's very,
that.
Very,
or
very
did
true.
You, or did you suggest to him in the way that you didn't, frankly, that
maybe they baited him.
You can, because let's be real, we understand the reasons for that. Small market trying to hold on to a superstar box office kind of guy.
Absolutely. But at the end of the day, the responsibility, as it always does, it falls to the player. This is
over and over, every mistake.
This is the NBA, man. This is a bottom dollar, bottom line business, man. It's not personal. It's not, you know, this isn't a college kid here. This is a professional who's responsible for his own, charting his own path, charting his own way. So, that doesn't mean that Zach Kleiman is not going to be held to account for other decisions, whatever happens as a result of this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like, oh, Zach Kleiman just gets a get-out-of-jail-free card no matter what for the rest of time. I mean, if he makes this trade, it's a bad trade, and the Grizzlies are in purgatory for the next 5 years, right? Obviously, he's going to go. There's just no question about that. But, like we're in the situation with John Morant because that's where Ja put it. I mean, that's just the end of we shouldn't be naive. I'm not saying you are.
No.
About like Ja not being on board with a trade.
Well, right.
Like let's not be naive about that.
This was a year that I think we all agreed we understood why Memphis wouldn't give him the contract extension, although it made sense. I think we kind of going in, we said, all right, well, you know, both sides get it done. Ja's changed representation. I don't think any of us blamed the Grizzlies,
dude,
for coming out of the summer and not giving it to him. Why would you?
They look
based on his history, based on his availability history. What you told him was, look, dude, we need you to be big for us this coming year, and then we'll get it done. That's ball in Ja's court.
Yep.
He understood that. He came into the year talking about playing 82 games. I'm the one that's got to be there. He has not given you that.
Yep.
So how can we go back now to climb and, oh, boy, you messed up, when we all understood right now where things were? Ball was in Ja's court. He's got to show us. He hasn't this year. He has forced your hand. Yep. That's where we can take the emotion and everything else out of it, because I think we, John, it kind of was personal because we all loved him.
That's true.
I mean, this guy was perfect for Memphis.
Yep.
You know, got it out of the mud, had a chip on his shoulder, you know, came up underrated. You know, just the whole story, we just fell in love with it. And let's be real, he was a worker to start. That's how he got it, you know?
Yep.
And so we fell in love with that story. Let's not act like he didn't change.
Absolutely.
You know, and did that chip stay there? And frankly, to your point, we've given him chance after chance after chance because we've loved him so much to that point.
Yep.
And maybe, again, whether it's us, media, because we were backing him up on half the stuff he was doing.
Bro, we defended John
until the organization, right? It was kids' gloves.
It was.
We didn't hold it. And that's
part of
the reason why I think you are still here today in year seven. You have a powder who has not grown up.
Right.
When he doesn't get things, he's who bails on you 5 games in, bro.
Bails
after
on
he
you.
Just said, hey, well, listen, I'm gonna While Jenkins is out, I'm going to sit out. I'm going to come back. Everything's going to be back.
No doubt.
And you bail 5 games in the next season.
Yep. You
can't depend on that, man.
You can't.
And I hate we're here because it was personal. We all loved Ja. We all hoped it would work.
But the best thing that ever happened maybe for the Grizzlies franchise, and I hate to even say this, and it's crazy to say this, is that they didn't give him that extension in the offseason, because that would have meant an 8-year commitment essentially to Ja Morant, who at 26.
Well, think about trying to trade that.
Is breaking down. Impossible. You'd have been stuck, and you would.
If it doesn't play,
now you can actually rebuild.
If he'd show folks that he could play this year and be out there, different story. Remember, totally that
different.
Was the charge going into the year. He understood it.
That's right.
That's what was important.
It's obviously never going
to
happen here. It may happen at the next place. It may have. You know, he may go somewhere, and I think he will. I mean, I think at least for the beginning, he's going to have a renewed sense of, you know, motivation and everything like that. And, you know, they sent me out. They didn't want me. I'm going to show them. I believe that 100%. He's going to play really well in the beginning stages at the next spot. But that eventually will wane.
Well, I'm not going to predict it or hope for it, but that would be the point, right? You might go there with all the intentions in the world, have the chip on the shoulder again, but are you going to stay healthy?
Right.
Based on your game, that's going to be tough to do.
Yes.
Right? What happens when things don't go your way or you're not 1A?
No, you go, I mean, I think he's in for a rude awakening.
Hey, John, what if he's cool with being 1B where he's going to start, but then he ain't cool with it 20 games in because he doesn't feel like it's the best thing for the team? And he flips, because we've seen that guy too.
Totally.
That flips on you, tells you one thing, and then all of a sudden he's out on it. And again, you cannot build something that's strong foundationally. The guy who's flipping on you, as much as we wanted him to grow out of this. How many times we said that year to year to year?
Yeah.
This will be the year. This will be the year. This will be the year.
Yeah.
And Paul, you have to acknowledge, all right, it's not happening. We must move on.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. So I think that's where it is right now with the Grizzlies. I think the trade deadline's not for basically another 3.5 weeks. So, you know, you've got some time to, you know, figure this all out. May not happen by the deadline. Who knows? But I think, you know, there's really no choice. Yeah. And then the other side, I wish I had better news to start the week with. But
well, Bears won, but yes, I know you've got to hit this first.
Yes. The Memphis Tigers go down to FAU as 2-point dogs, 2-0 on the season in the American, and, you know, basically get handled in Boca. 89-78 was your final, out-rebounded 46-29, give up 19 second chance points. And the Tigers never really made it close in the second half. I mean, I guess you could say they got it to maybe it was 7 or 8 in the final minute, but that was just a furious rally to, you know, throw everything at it, and it just was not nearly enough. And so now the Tigers are 7-8. I know everybody's going to tell me that it doesn't matter because they can't get an at-large, but they're now 87th at KenPom, which would, if it finished right now, that would be Penny's worst finish at KenPom in his career at Memphis. And Jason, they don't look remotely close to the best team in the American, I think is the most disturbing piece of it. That looked like FAU yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, you knew what this team, you know, was not after, you're not done with the non-conference. You still got Utah State, but through those first 12 games.
Right.
What you could still tell yourself was it'll be good enough to be solid in the American through the regular season and then go win the conference tournament. No, because nobody said undefeated.
Yep.
With what we'd seen.
Yep.
That said, you watched this team. I watched them, John, when they were down against Rice, and I wondered if they were going to come back and win that game. And then yesterday felt like a sort of, I don't know if we've got the effort that we saw, you know, sort of feeling after the game that we saw after UNLV. We were back to questioning, all right, is the effort there? Because they shot the ball well, but look, from a rebounding standpoint, they were actually, you know, played off the floor again. And this is, we are now in that conference portion that we always said, well, there's enough talent here to go out there and handle it. I don't know, John. That's where I'm at now, is I'd always suspected, okay, well, you're not going to be an at-large, but you'll be good enough to, for the most part, look good. Hell, they've trailed for a lot of this AAC schedule so far, this, yep, American schedule so far. So it's, yep, it's scary. It makes me think about how 2 years ago, boy, did things come off the rails when we didn't have answers,
mm-hmm,
right? That team that started so well. Now, different than the start Javon Quinterly and those guys had in non-con. That looked fine. But the wheels came off in conference, and you wonder if it could go this way. Again, if Penny's just left after these games scratching his head. It's discouraging, to say the least, to hear your coach say he's tried everything.
And he has. He started 11 different lineups in 15 games.
Whether it's personnel, whether it's everything in practice, as he, you know, sort of the, or he's talking about with the answer to the question.
Yeah.
When you're sort of out of answers, boy, well, if you're out of answers.
Right.
Where's this thing going?
And I think, like, I definitely agree that it was just a bad mix of players. Like, he just clearly
bad
did
batch,
that.
Bad batch, bad batch.
But let me also say, he thought it was his second most talented team ever.
Well, he's selling his own.
Yeah.
This one more his than at least.
Right.
They're right. All his. You understand, right, what I'm to make sure, yeah, I, yeah, get that out,
no,
on the
he
record
was personally
here.
Responsible.
But this one more his than, yeah, even the last two, because he had Nolan and, yeah, Stansberry. Yes.
Yeah. But this might be his,
you're right,
lowest, I mean, talented team ever, and he saw something much better than it actually ever could have been.
Well, individually,
yeah,
weirdly, I'm not suggesting he's 100% right, but you see his point on there is talent from top to bottom, and it doesn't fit.
Right.
That's the problem. There's no chemistry when it's out on the floor. That's the thing that wasn't,
right,
thought through.
Right, right, right.
I mean, I can still kind of see where he was going with that whole top to bottom, second most talented.
But yeah.
Come on here. I mean, it's pieces that are all, you know, pointed outward or inward or everything else, a bunch of snaggled teeth.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They doesn't come together and have you a nice set of chompers there.
Well, that Scott was there yesterday, as were a lot of athletic department administrators. And I think the questions that they're going to have to ask Penny Hardaway after the season is, like, what is going to change? What are you going to do differently next year? Because that to me is like, something has to change. Something in your evaluation process, something in your player picking process, you know, because you can't just do this again. You can't just say, I'm going to go Because, Jason, I do think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, nobody's going to want to come back to this, right? They're 7-8. They're going to have to overhaul this thing again. Julius Thedford got hurt yesterday. That didn't look good. That looked like a non-contact injury. So I'm hopeful that that's not as serious as it looked. But, like, you're likely going to be in a very similar situation where you're having to replace 15 new players. So what's going to change about next year, next offseason? What are you going to do differently? Who on your staff is going to help you find players?
You're saying this is what Ed Scott is asking.
Yeah. I think that's the, like, and what is Penny going to say? You know, I mean, because as we were talking about before the show, this is now two out of three years where he has picked a bad batch of players that did not fit together. So can he still pick a team of players that can fit together? That is, I think, the question facing Memphis basketball right now.
No, I agree with what you're saying, and you're trying to get to solutions and everything else. We've talked about some of them before about what you could do. The question I think that Penny Hardaway has to be asked if it's a meeting with Ed Scott is, you still want to do this, man?
Absolutely.
That's where you have to start this.
Yeah.
Because you have to start, John, with a new reality. Let's be real. When we started this thing, you felt like you could call for all the smoke you wanted all because you go get anybody because you got Penny Hardaway. Well, now the reality's changed in that time since then. You got $4 to $5 million. And we can see if he can get up to 5.5 or 6 or whatever else. But frankly, that's where you're at while this thing has to focus on football.
It's about five.
So
right
with
now.
Those parameters, you go back to it and you say, Penny, Lord knows you got a shot better than you did this past season.
Well, cause
here's what you got.
And you have to make it clear.
Do you still want to do it?
It needs to be better than this.
Because this is unacceptable. 100.
You can't just do this and be 7-8.
That's obvious to Penny Hardaway right now. My guess is it's embarrassing for him to walk out there and see that mess out there. Now, he's not moving like it when you're talking about the other arenas being smaller than yours. I'd be keeping... Never mind. That's a side thing. Again, he thought he's going to go down there and win. But my point is, you have to ask him, dude, here's the reality. This is what we're going to have because John's going to be reality for the next coach.
It is.
Do you still want this, Penny? Because when you started it, here's the one thing. We felt like he could go get anybody recruiting or whatever else. Here's a little money, whatever. Here's the juice. We'll go do it.
I'm Penny Hardaway.
Then, with NIL even, we said Penny is perfectly positioned for this right now while everybody doesn't have $20 million to go spend.
Correct.
And we were. But now that has changed.
Correct.
And so it becomes more critical.
You have to work twice or three times as hard.
That your groceries now are hitting, that you are hitting on it, that there ain't a bad apple in the bunch.
That's right.
That all your ingredients are perfect, and more importantly, that when you cook it up, it comes together every time.
That's right.
Because this is the reality as Memphis shifts and can't go all in financially on basketball right now.
Right.
We've had that conversation about why they have to do it. So you have to say, Penny, here's the deal. You still want to do this? And then if he says yes, you have to consider, all right, man, well, then we got to make some serious changes. There has to be a serious approach. But you have to know, because maybe Penny will tell you, you know what? You're right. It's not worth it for me. It's not worth it for the university, frankly, because let's be real, the program has to be bigger than the coach. We got folks we got to get. But John, I need you to – that needs to be the question first.
Oh, totally.
Does Penny understand the reality? Because I don't think the reality is changing.
Right.
For him or, right. More importantly, for this next coach.
Right.
I think there's some perfect fix out there. Because basketball is what it is right now until you see whether or not you get to a new conference.
What worries me is that him being the relentless optimist that he is – is he will just convince himself that I picked the wrong batch. I won't do it again. But systems are in place for that to not happen?
That's when you get to those, show me what worked for you previously was having an architect right next to you. Let's be real. You going to have that guy, or am I supposed to trust you again after this batch you just showed me?
Right.
I'm going to need you to show me that guy. Again, if we're holding guys to account, real account.
Absolutely.
You have to show new plan that you believe in as an athletic director. It can't be same old to believe in. You know why? Because we're in year, what, 9 next year?
It'll be year 9.
So, again,
yeah.
Here's my thing. Like, you've had time, Penny.
Totally.
And that's where that would go more towards this conversation. How much more you want this? When do you see yourself pulling, you know, when are you pulling us out of this?
That's right.
In your vision, show me. And I'll see if I believe it.
Yeah.
And we'll see where we are. Because, frankly, as much as we've put the pressure on football, and it should be, how you got to be hot, you know, right, as realignment possibly starts back up. It's the same thing with basketball. You don't need this thing down in the dumps.
Yep.
Even though football's now out front. As an athletic program, remember, last year you ended top 25 in both. You need that to continue.
Yep.
So that one of these P4, whatever it is, whatever this new frontier looks like, says they got value. You don't need your basketball program falling off the map. So it's still, it's you as John says, you can't let this thing die on the vine. There needs to be some urgency here.
Yep.
But what every game in the American can't be is some sort of referendum. Oh, man, fire Penny Hardaway or not, we know what the charge is now. They better go win it. And after that, you better go ask him, does he still want to do this?
Yeah, I mean, the season is what it is at this
point. It is what it is.
They're not, you know, the seasons will have to play out. But I will say it was a little jarring to see how they were controlled by FAU yesterday on the glass. That you know, physicality.
It's supposed to be a close game. According to KenPom, it is a one-point loss.
Yeah.
But you got handled.
You got handled.
That is, I'm with you. It was alarming.
That was eye-opening. But we'll see how it goes. But
down for a stretch against Rice, it looked like for a minute he might not come back.
It's not. It doesn't feel like things are in a good place at this moment. Is what I would say. So anyway, we got to get to Jeff Goodman. Jeff Goodman will join us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts on this and more on the other side. Stick around. J&J 99 FM ESPN. Jeff Goodman is a co-founder of Field of 68. Do you know this song? Do you happen to know it by chance?
I don't know. Is it like the Indiana Fight song?
Yeah. Aren't you supposed to be an honorary Indiana alum? Shouldn't it be obvious?
They sing like Indiana, like after every win, which like there's been like a million wins over the last 2 years under Cignetti.
For those that don't know, Jeff Goodman's daughter, Talia, is a proud Hoosier graduate. Just recently, right?
Yeah, she just graduated like 3 weeks ago, and here's my question to both of you guys. All right, here's my question. And again, I've never really been a big fan of any team. This is kind of like my first go around, to be honest, because I've always covered sports and tried to be objective and, you know, maybe a little Carolina Hurricanes fan because my daughter's got me into hockey again. How much money would you guys pay per ticket, you know, for whatever sporting event? Like, what's the most you'd ever pay to watch your team play in the pinnacle of whatever sport that is?
Well, Jason's a Bears fan, and they're in the Final Four of the NFC. So it's actually a great question for him.
They're in the Super Bowl. Let's say they're in the Super Bowl, Jason. Mm. How much would you pay to watch them? I don't know if it'll happen, but they got a chance.
Yeah, especially eventually, yeah. Eventually.
What's that number? What is that number that you would pay just to get in the stadium?
I would. I'm in a different bracket than you and John. Let's be real. It's going to be a lot less for me than it would be for you guys, probably. So your teams, but I think I would get between probably maybe 5 and 10,000.
Wow.
Not for me though, Jeff. It'd be for this. It'd be for me and the son. Because he is so now all in that I think it would be so worth it to have another generation of Smith there, to not just the memory be for me, but obviously for him, that it would be 100%. Worth for me going into debt for. I would have, Jeff, because I don't have that sort of disposable income. I would put it on a credit card. We'd get a couple of tickets and go.
Well, the president's lowering your rates on your interest rates there, so you're actually in good shape.
There you go. John,
I think, John, what would you do?
I think 5 is the number. If I was a fake fan like you, it would be a lot lower.
Well, I am. I mean, I'm not denying that I'm a bandwagon-ish. I mean, I'll say this. I was in Indiana football games 4 years ago when nobody was there, but I'm not like these Indiana fans that have suffered through 30 and 40 years of absolute atrociousness when it comes to Indiana football. But yes, I agree with what Jason is saying, and that's why I'm going to do it. It's an experience. My daughter's 22, and it's an experience that you're going to have with her and my wife. Yep. That you probably are never. I mean, people are like, "Well, maybe Sig just keeps this thing going, and they're a train that never stops." I just don't believe that in this day and age. If I were an NFL team, I would go after Kurt Cignetti, legitimately.
I guess we're not getting raises at the Field of 68. I guess that's
absolutely not. I mean, we are. You're not. I mean, poor performance equals no raises.
I got to make sure I'm still getting paid. I got to go look at the account. I think you guys have been getting over on it.
That's Doster's territory. You can't yell at me for not getting paid.
All right. I'll yell at you for other things. All right. There's a lot to get to today, but I do want to start with the Memphis basketball situation, obviously. And I don't need you to go. I don't need you to lecture us on the whole NBA thing, okay? We get it. We know your stance on how former NBA players don't do well in college. The guys who've made a lot of money. The meaningful NBA players, not the guys that got a cup of coffee. All right, so I already took that off your table. Let's move forward. What is your assessment of where things are with Memphis and Penny right now?
I mean, it's a terrible season. I give them credit for scheduling again in the non-conference. It worked last year. Well, it didn't work this year. And, you know, I think part of this that's lost, guys, is, and you guys know where I stand with this guy, with Slick Rick Stansberry. Before he was cut loose or left or whatever the hell happened, like, he put together a lot of that team last year. Let's be honest. He got some of those dudes there. And that's what Rick Stansberry does, right? Like, he's an elite recruiter. He always has been. I don't think he's the best X's and O's guy, and I think there's some questionable tactics to get those players. But he got them. He helped get them there. And I just think this team put together was poorly constructed, right? Number one, you had to wait, you know, see what happened with Haggerty, right? They waited out, which, again, listen, I probably would have done the same thing. You know, you kind of had to. But at some point you say, hey, if we're going to keep waiting, that's money we can't spend elsewhere right now. And at some point you've got to make a business decision and get a feel for the situation and understand, hey, you know what? PJ is not coming back. He's not coming back. So let's go get some dudes in the portal. Well, they got the wrong dudes. I mean, let's be honest. They got some of the wrong dudes here. They got some guys that just hadn't won a ton at the previous stops, other guys that were kind of unproven. And, again, when you have to flip your roster, this is what can happen. And not just with Memphis, with a lot of other programs around the country. Look at Kentucky right now. Look at Kentucky. Not at the same extent as Memphis, but Mark Pope had to flip the roster, and they had momentum last year, and then they took a bunch of guys this year that, frankly – you know, for $22 million, the roster looks absolutely atrocious for that much money. So Penny's not the only one. But again, I just think, you know, 7 years, they're on their eighth year, and it doesn't look like they're – I mean, they could win the American. They could win it and get in the NCAA tournament. But this team, even if they got in the tournament, it would be a miracle if they won an NCAA tournament game unless they play in the play-in game, right? That would be it. So we're talking 8 years. One NCAA tournament win? Am I wrong? In 8 years?
One. Mm-hmm.
Just one.
I mean, to me, that's just not enough. Mm-hmm. Like you can't even fight that. Like,
now, by the way, you were saying that when it was year five and that correct. It wasn't enough. And I think that was, yeah. I think you were premature then. But I mean, now that we're in year eight and the answer is still one, I mean, I think it becomes a lot more of a valid discussion.
Yeah, last year we can say, hey, you know what? They had bad luck with Tyrese getting hurt. And I
true.
Agree with that 100%. 100%. They could have won another tournament game or two last year. But, I mean, the numbers, and I read them off in After Dark last year. This is crazy how similar they are to Josh Pastner's first, you know, 240, you know, his 240 games. 167 and 73 for Josh Pastner in 7 years. Penny is 169 and 75. He is two games better overall, and their numbers in conference play are similar as well. 87 and 39 for Penny, 82 and 36 for Josh. Josh went to four NCAA tournaments, had two tournament wins, and you and everybody else was running him out of town. And again, rightfully so. He didn't do enough. He didn't do enough at Memphis. Like let's stop acting like Memphis is some mid-program. It's not. Now, again, the conference isn't great. I do think that hurts them to some extent. But you should be dominating this conference. We shouldn't be looking today at the net rankings and seeing, you know, Tulsa, South Florida, FAU, and Wichita State all above Memphis in the net rankings, and Memphis outside of the top 100. This may not be a top 25 program anymore, but it's damn right a top 40 program. They shouldn't be 107 or whatever the hell they are right now in the net.
How delicately are you handling things, Jeff, from this aspect? If you're Ed Scott, you know, yeah. Penny was one of your big donors before you gave him the job. Ideally, unlike with Larry Finch, you would like Penny to go back into that role. So if you for say, hey, Penny wants to continue, but you decide, you know what, bro? No, you're not doing it well enough. I got to fire you. Forget you going on. Forget us talking about it. I got to fire you. You're probably talking about a guy who is not at any point in the future a donor for the program. For a program like Memphis, where you don't have but a handful, you would know this, Jeff, better than anybody, a handful of guys that you can go to and say, Penny or Bill Lurie, we need $1 million. Losing a guy like that, very important. So how do you handle this if you are Ed Scott, Jeff, understanding all those sort of dynamics to things?
Well, I think you're just looking at it pragmatically. All right, you have Penny right now. This is a situation you have in door A, and it's not working. Mm-hmm. And then door B might be, you're probably going to have similar resources, but the difference might be, you might be, whoever comes in has to be able to get FedEx on board, like really on board, because that's the game changer for me. If you can get them on board, it opens doors that other schools in the league just don't have access to. And a lot of other schools really nationally don't have access to. So, you know, the next hire, if they do make a move, which, you know, we'll see how this season plays out, right? There's still a long way to go, and they could catch fire and, you know, win the league tournament and make the NCAA tournament. And then everybody feels a little bit better about the situation, and you give them another year for sure. I just don't see it really changing that much. You know, yeah. I don't see it being sustained, I guess is the big thing. You can hit it for a year like they did last year. I just don't see this thing being sustained. And then, like, how long have they really been nationally relevant in these almost 8 years?
They were relevant. Really? I mean, they were relevant with the recruiting class in 1920. And then, you know, yes. Wiseman got suspended and left.
Yep.
They were relevant.
Last year.
I mean, runner-ups to Maui.
Last year. They were relevant 21-22, I would say, overall with Jalen Duren and Imani Bates.
Yeah.
They were ranked number 10 in the country in 23-24.
Yeah.
I mean, half the time they've been nationally relevant. Half the time. Which,
yeah. Yeah, part of that half the time is in the preseason.
Jeff, I'll be honest. If I could snap my fingers and if I could say, it could still work with Penny if this happened. It's hire a real staff. It's listen to that staff, but it's hire a real staff, because I do think like there's just nobody on this staff that can help him. Like he hires Roy Rogers, you know, like right before the season starts for nothing, and I'm sure he's helping developmentally, but he's not helping him build rosters. He's not helping him maintain anybody. He loses Nolan Smith. I just don't think that Penny is going to, you know, and most head coaches don't do this, right, Jeff? Like, there's head coaches that they lean on their assistants to go scout, to go find players, to go over to Europe, to see guys, to have relationship with guys. And I think that's where Penny is really, really, really doing himself a disservice, because nobody on this staff can help
him. And, John, even more than scouting, I think part of it is you should have right now a guy on staff that is digging through tape and watching every other game of every mid-major guy who might be hitting the portal, of every high-major guy who might be unhappy, talking to all those
low-major, even. You know, I mean?
Yes.
Like that, your job is to watch every low-major game in America and tell me who can help us.
And to go out and meet every damn agent, no matter who it is.
Yep.
No matter who it is, I don't care how low-level they are these days, because they have access to these players, especially the low-major and mid-major ones. And I don't think they have anybody on staff doing that.
I guarantee you Mike Davis, Roy Rogers, and Jermaine do not have – they just don't widespread. Right. They just don't.
So I think you're right. I think a big part of it is the infrastructure. The infrastructure of how the game has changed now, and how you want to build your staff, and it's not like it was when Penny broke in 8 years ago. And again, there are only so many guys that can do that job, that GM-ish job, and do it well. But you got to pay. You got to get the right guy in, and that could be a major game changer as far as putting together the team in the offseason, understanding who you have a shot at, who you really don't, how much it's going to cost. All that stuff. Can you really get him? Is the agent just driving up the price and using you for leverage to get that guy more money somewhere else? All those things that these guys, it's hard. If they're coaching all day and going through scouting reports for the next game and working with these guys on the court, that shouldn't be their job. You need a full-time guy dedicated to that.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. And I would just say, like, when Murray State has that guy, and Memphis doesn't, that's the problem. Like, that's something that,
problem.
You know, if I'm Ed Scott, right, like, that's one thing that, you know, hey, I don't know who's making what over here, you know, but we're about to allocate some salary to that guy. If this is going to continue.
It's going to be too late. What people don't understand is if you wait until April to do this, till the season's over, it's too late.
Right.
You need to do that today. Today.
You're right. You're exactly right. So I don't know. I mean, it'll depend
on.
Do
you like my names? I know we don't. It's like forbidden to talk about potential.
You've already replaced Penny. There's not even an opening.
I'm just saying if you do. Those were three names that I threw
Who were the names that you threw out last night on After Dark? If there's a change, who are the names that you threw out? And I assume you did this because you have some information. So who were the names?
I mean, Ryan Miller certainly should be in the equation, right? I mean, he's got Memphis ties with coaching under Cal, with his brother being there.
I need him to win the league. I'll say that. I need him to win the league to make that. If he doesn't win the league, then it's. I think that's not happening. But if he wins the league,
he needs to win the league and the league tournament and get in the NCAA tournament.
Right. That's what I want. Go to the NCAA tournament. Yes.
Got to do both. Shaheen Holloway from Seton Hall. Memphis is a better job than Seton Hall. Seton Hall is having a really good year, but it's probably the worst job along with DePaul in the Big East. Shaheen fits. Like, his personality, his toughness, that fits a place.
It screams like a leverage move for him. He would use Memphis' leverage to get more NIL at Seton Hall. That's what
Maybe.
It feels like. That's what it feels
like. Still in a better conference in the Big East than he would be in the American, where he'd have to win it every year.
That's the one thing. Yes. That's the one thing that would be hard. But he's got the worst job, arguably, in the Big East.
I do think Shaheen Holloway would be a perfect fit at Memphis.
I agreed on that part.
He plays an ugly style, but like it would fit at Memphis.
If you win, who cares? If you win, nobody cares what.
I mean, he went to an Elite Eight with St. Peter's, bro. He will win.
And then the third for me was a guy that I know you don't know a lot about, but Tony Skin at George Mason. Done an incredible job. They're winning the A-10. They finished first in the A-10 last year. It's his alma mater, George Mason. He is a tough MF-er. He is a tough dude who, again, fits. You got to find the right guy for Memphis. I know that. You know that. Tony Skin is the right type of guy that could handle Memphis, that Memphis fans. He's kind of got a little bit of Shaheen in him, right? Like, they're similar in kind of they're tough, no BS. They're going to say it the way it is,
again, he would need to win the A-10. I would say you got to do that. You got to make a tournament.
Totally.
Another name that was floated to me yesterday was Steve Forbes.
Yeah, I just don't know how you can hire a guy, and I like Forbes. Everybody likes Forbes. That has not made the tournament and probably won't this year. This year six for him.
Yep.
At Wake.
Yep.
Six.
And they're not going to the tournament.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, how do you hire a guy at Memphis that has gone over six? You can't. I don't care how many 21 seasons he's had. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. I think, honestly, you have to have made a tournament to get the – if Penny's moving on and you're replacing Penny, if the problem has been not making the tournament, how the hell do you hire a coach that's never made the tournament? Like,
it'd be hard.
It doesn't.
And again, let me go back to one thing about Penny, because I think a lot of people are going to hear this and be like, oh man, he's a hater on Penny. I love Penny the person. I love him. I think he's a great dude. I've had plenty of interactions with him. I'm rooting for him, and was last year when he flipped it. I was the first one saying, like, I'm wrong. And then, you know, it's kind of been a one-year blip to some degree here at that level of, you know, winning in the non-conference like they did. So nobody would be happier than to see Memphis be really good again under Penny Hardaway. It'd be awesome. But how many years are we going to go through this?
That's a fair question.
Is year eight. This is year eight and one tournament win in 8 years. I think Penny, if he were looking in the mirror, I think if he's on with any of us, if we asked him, hey, Penny, one tournament win in 8 years, how do you feel about that? He would say, I'm absolutely disappointed.
Yeah.
He would. I will say, Jeff, I don't think it was just a fluke, though. I think you would agree that last year we saw Penny could coach. We saw Penny pull some stuff out of Dane Danger after he benched him and had him playing at an All-American level at the end of the season. Like, that's why it's so frustrating, because you see parts of Penny that can coach his ass off. But then allowing, right, to get to the point, I agree with John, where your staff is at, to where they're not really, where they can't tell you, hey, Doug's got to miss that free throw so we can beat Wake and not let them set up that last play, right? Those kinds of things you've let get by you.
Right.
And now
you're Mike Davis. You're not listening to Mike Davis? No. I mean, you brought him on as a veteran head coach. Like, how are you not listening to
Larry
Davis?
Brown.
Larry
Brown's the only coach who ever won an NBA and a college basketball championship, but he didn't listen to Larry Brown. I mean, that's.
Yeah, I thought he had changed that way. I thought he had been introspective of, hey, you know what? Yes, I've matured. I understand. He said it many times last year to a lot of different people, including us.
Right.
And I just think this team, when you looked at them on paper before the season, you were hopeful. But when you looked at it closely,
anyway,
they didn't have it.
All right, man. Well, this has been fun. You were the first guest in our new time slot.
I know. Congrats on the new time slot.
Thank you, brother.
I thought for sure it was a demotion for John. And
no, it's actually. I think it's a promotion. I think it's a promotion. But
Jason obviously has carried you to the better time slot, because there's no way in hell
the other way around.
That is exactly right. So, Jeff, thank you for being
here.
Appreciate
you, brother.
Love you guys.
We'll catch
you
up soon. Thanks, man. Yep. He is Jeff Goodman, Field of 68. Appreciate him coming on and breaking it down. I mean, again, we have plenty of time to get to names. I mean, there's not a job opening. We don't know that there will be a job opening. So even sort of fantasizing about who the next coach might be is incredibly premature. The season still has to play out. Nothing would change at the earliest until they miss the tournament, you know. And if they make it, you know. Although I will say Kevin Keats made a Final Four. That man got fired the year after. I mean – you know, if you went to, you know, two in a row, I'm not sure if that's a saving grace. But again, it's Penny, so there's more, you know, there's going to be some more delicacy and sensitivity to that. So, you know, again, there's a lot that's going to have to play out before we're there. But appreciate Jeff Goodman for joining us on the show. All right, we're going to come back. Dan Wilkins going to join us. We'll talk to him about the college football playoff, Miami, Indiana. We'll get his thoughts at some point on Memphis basketball. Man, here we go. 9 to noon. J&J back after this.